from KQED.
This is Forum. I'm Mina Kim. Are you familiar with Dudleas? They're the squat succulent plants with red-tipped silvery leaves that grow along California's rocky coastline, and they sprout stalks of brightly colored flowers during the spring bloom season. These native plants are also the target of an organized network of plant poachers who've been uprooting Dudleas for sale in China and South Korea. We look at what's driving the demand for the plants and what's being done to protect them with Daniel Glusenkamp. He's executive director of the California Native Plant Society. Good morning, Daniel Glusenkamp.
Hi, good morning.
So tell us, why are Dudleas the target of plant poachers?
Yeah, there's a long answer and a short answer. The short answer is because they're just absolutely beautiful. But I think the long answer really has more to do with people and our connection with nature and our connection with plants.
And which is what?
Well, which is basically, you know, we've evolved in these natural systems. And when we look at something like a Dudlea, these Dudleas are little succulent plants that are rosettes. So that means they have a whole bunch of short little leaves, kind of like when you look at an artichoke, and they're all kind of nestled together. They tend to be kind of chalky and very beautiful in a rugged kind of way. And the leaves are arranged in kind of a mathematical pattern, actually called a Fibonacci series. So when we look at these, they do something really interesting to us. They trigger kind of just the basic aesthetics of something that's pretty, but then they also engage our mind in this kind of underlying mathematics of the universe. And so, you know, the broad answer there is that these Dudleas are very popular because plants do something special for people. And so we're always looking for an excuse to go out and get more of them.
Is it pronounced Dudlea? Sorry, I thought it was Dudlea.
Yeah, I think it can go either way.
Okay. Well, tell us where we can find these. Typically in Northern California.
Yeah, well, you can find them all over California. The best place to find them is at your local nursery. And we've got a lot of native plant nurseries that have great selection of these plants and a lot of others.
But clearly that's not where poachers are going.
Yeah.
Where are they going?
They didn't get the memo on that one. But they're learning. They're learning. The poachers are going primarily to seaside cliffs, mostly in the protected lands, all these great wild lands that California has, you know, earned an international reputation for saving and protecting. And so these folks get excited to come to California and get some of the good stuff that we got, which, you know, you got to appreciate. But they're going about it the wrong way, that's for sure. They occur on the coasts all around California. Dudleas, you know, it's a really interesting genus of plants, a group of plants that really is just found in the southwestern United States for the most part. And for the most part, it's a California genus. These plants, they're what people have called evolution in action. There's somewhere between 40 and 65 different types of Dudleas, species and subspecies. We don't actually know how many, because basically, as you look at the plants, they're still evolving. And so they're found all over California, a little bit inland, as far inland as Arizona has a few, as far north as southern Oregon, and as far south as, I believe, Sonora in Mexico. But really, California is the global center for Dudlea evolution.
And the suspects, as I understand it, poached plants from Point Reyes National Seashore, other parts of Mendocino County and Point Arena.
Yeah. And, you know, Dudlea poaching's probably been happening for as long as there's been people in California, as long as, you know, maybe it wasn't poaching back, you know, 13,000 years ago. But it really has hit the radar as international demand has grown. They've been kind of a sexy thing in Korea and then in Japan, and now growing more popular in China, which is terrifying because there's a huge potential market for them there. And so that has driven international demand, and folks have responded to that to try and come and get plants for that demand. So there's been low-level Dudlea poaching going on for a long time. It really hit the radar in probably May 2017 when a trailer full of very rare Dudleas was busted trying to cross north over the border from Mexico. And that kind of was a bit of a warning signal that that then turned into alarms in December of 2017 when we realized that there was international Dudlea poaching going on up and down California, far into Northern California, and that we had a real problem on our hands.
And they were finding people with hundreds of these succulents in backpacks and boxes and people's garages as well, for those who were, I think there was a couple that lived in Southern California that was nabbed for this as well.
Yep.
You mentioned that you had learned of an arrest of somebody who had gathered a lot of rare Dudleas. So tell me, what do you mean by rare? Does that mean that they're irreplaceable or that they've done something to the environment where they are that we may not be able to get more of them?
Yeah, well, both of those. you know, we tend to think of rare things as endangered, and that it's our fault. But in California, well, you know, for background, California is one of 34 global biodiversity hotspots. We basically have a lot of different kinds of plants. And part of that is because every area, every neighborhood, town has its own plants. And so we have a lot of rare Dudleas. If we have something like about 2/3 of our Dudleas are rare. And that doesn't mean that humans have driven them close to extinction. For the most part, it just means that they've always been rare. They've always only grown at that place. They've always been local to a certain part of California or of Mexico. And so people going after these rare Dudleas, really, that's the greatest danger. Folks going along the cliffs and collecting Dudleya farinosa, it's bad, and they'll go to jail, and they'll pay $20,000 in fines, but it probably won't drive them extinct. Folks going to islands off of Mexico and going to the only location for a rare Dudleya pachyphytum or something, they can drive that thing extinct with just a few backpacks. And so there's some very real conservation concern with this stuff.
And I heard that these plants can sell for generally $40 to $80 on the black market in South Korea, China, or Japan, but also that exceptionally large ones, mature ones, rare ones, old ones, some as old as decades old, could sell for up to $1,000. Am I getting these figures right?
Yeah, well, yeah, we see these numbers passed around. And, you know, you can get on the internet and search, and there's some interesting things for sale. But as anyone who's ever looked at eBay, just because someone wants that much for something doesn't mean it's selling for that. It looks like, you know, what I have heard is that in Korea and Japan, that a typical nicely aged, really rugged looking, nasty beat up Dudleya might be selling for $40. Some of the rare ones might go for quite a bit more, but it's not clear to the degree to which those are actually selling at that rate.
You know, and when what I did look you say a Dudleya costs at the nursery?
Probably $5 or $10. And
this would not be, of course, a native Rocky coastline.
Yeah. And they're very easy to grow in California. When you in a windowsill in northern Japan, they're not going to live very long. So it's doubly tragic that we're causing great harm along, you know, these wild lands that we saved in California, some of the most expensive real estate in the world we have locked up to protect. And so we have these things and we're losing them from that. And they're being brought back to someone's windowsill where they will freeze to death, die from mold and mildew, and whatever wild bugs that are on these things, things that are native to California and part of our ecosystem, don't belong in South Korea. And so these bugs climb off the Dudleas and you got these weird moths eating up your other succulent plants in your collection. So it's too bad.
They're not even going to make it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, Daniel Glusenkamp is executive director of the California Native Plant Society. Let me invite you, our listeners, to join the conversation with your questions or thoughts on succulent theft and what's happening to Dudleya farinosa. Have you even noticed succulent threats in your own neighborhood or the trails that you frequent? The number 866-733-6786. Again, 866-733-6786. You can post your comments on our website, kqed.org/forum, on Facebook, on Twitter, or you can email us at forum@kqed.org. Before I talk about enforcement efforts here, I'm curious what education efforts are going on in the other countries potentially to tell people what devastation they're causing or potentially causing by demanding these products.
Yeah, well, you know, this whole thing has happened so fast that we don't have a fully organized response. And one big gap is that we're not doing a good job of educating folks overseas. I think the education is happening just because, to a certain degree, it's happening because of the enforcement has been very successful. And so I think people who thought that they could come to California and collect a few plants and make some money are probably learning that they can't. They risk their lives on these cliffs. They risk serious jail time and big fines, and they're getting them.
That's one thing I was struck by. I was surprised by some of the penalties that were levied against. For example, there was a couple in Southern California where they spent anywhere from 40 one, the husband, I believe, spent 40 days in jail and the wife 180 days in jail and paid, you know, $25,000 or so total in fines between the two of them.
Yeah. Yeah. That was a couple that got caught at Garapata State Beach, Californians, and brought them back to their garage in Palmdale where they were busted. And we're seeing, you know, I think we may have kind of seen peak Dudleya poaching. There's been a bunch of big busts of, you know, 2,300. That trailer coming over the border from Mexico is 4,800. The big, well-organized stuff, I'm hoping that we don't see as much of that. for a little while, we saw a whole lot of people with backpacks getting 50 plants or 100 plants and stuff like that. And there have been, you know, over the course of maybe a dozen busts or so, people have been getting really serious penalties. And so I think they're realizing that it doesn't pencil out economically and it doesn't pencil out as far as the penalties.
So the penalties are a deterrent, you think?
Yeah. But we're doing some other stuff, too. Education, you know, education has been really key to this. Many of these busts have happened because private citizens have spotted someone climbing a cliff going after Dudleyas. And 2 years ago, these folks may not have known what Dudleyas was, what Dudleyas were. Today, they're looking for it. And so that kind of education has been really important. We've also educated law enforcement. I heard a story of a brand new law enforcement personnel arriving to Santa Rosa Island. And the first thing he did was go to the botanist and say, how do I recognize a Dudleya? And I can tell you, 5 years ago, law enforcement folks weren't on the lookout for Dudleya poachers. So education's been important. And there's other solutions that we have. You know, at the California Native Plant Society, we're trying to flood the market with Dudleyas. We were given a bunch of Dudleya seeds from the world expert of California Dudleya, Steve McCabe, and we're growing them now. We're going to have many thousands of Dudleyas to give out in about 5 months. And our plan is to give them out to groups who want to pot them into cute little things. So little kind of Etsy style, you know, after work wine and Dudleya parties or, workplace retreats. And basically give them flats of 1,000 Dudleyas and ask them to bring, you know, cute flower pots, cups, mugs, baby shoes, whatever you want to see a Dudleya growing in, have a planting party, and then give those out to the world so that we flood the market with both free Dudleyas and also with joyful education about, you know, you can have Dudleyas without risking your life.
Well, on that point, Noel writes, I think a lot of people are wondering why the Chinese and Koreans want California wild succulents. Could American succulent growers go to Asia and help them develop their own succulents?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Dudleyas are not that hard to grow if you have the right conditions. And so I suspect that, you know, enterprising folks in Korea and Japan and China are right now growing Dudleyas, and they will capture the market quite capably. You know, if you can get $40 for a Dudleya plant, you're going to grow. So I think there's a natural solution there. But it's a broader issue. Worldwide, poaching of plants, poaching of all kinds of animals, but poaching of plants is a significant problem. And there are just too many people for us each to have, one of those wild plants dying in our windowsill. And so this is kind of a problem that, you know, we as a species, we as a society are increasingly dealing with. For the most part, we're coming up with good solutions. And it's when we have a real failure like this one that it really stands out.
Well, let me go to our callers and start with Paul in San Francisco. Hi, Paul.
Hi there. Yeah, I run a Bay Natives Nursery in San Francisco, and we've, over the years, gotten a lot of requests from Koreans for Dudleyas. And I did some research, and there was a guy after the Korean War, who stayed there and popularized the Dudleyas. So that's kind of the history.
In terms of the origin.
Yeah. Then I guess it spread to other parts of Asia as well.
Well, also, as you said, the joy and interest in them has continued with the fact that they are very much popular in interior design. If you open up any furniture catalog these days, you will see succulents as part of the decor.
Yeah, they're fantastic. Everyone deserves a Dudleya, and we can supply them. They're not that hard to grow. Paul, thanks for calling that. Your nursery is great. I do want to let people know if they want to know where to find Dudleyas or other plants, they can go to Calscape. Calscape.org is a really great resource that will help you find what plants grow in your area and actually will tell you what nurseries in the area carry those plants. So it's a lot better. I mean, sure, book a trip to Mendocino and go look at the Dudleyas in the wild if they're still there. But when you want one for your home decor, get it at a nursery.
Could you take a moment, Daniel Glusenkamp, just to talk about what kind of environmental damage can be done or even impacts on our biodiversity when native plants are in large numbers ripped from their habitats?
Yeah, thank you very much. Yeah, well, you know, these native plants are the fundament of ecosystems. Everything depends on them. These communities of nature that have been here for millions of years are really pretty well integrated. And when you remove the plants, whether from, you know, poaching them or putting in a housing development, you remove the food that feeds the microbes and the bacteria and the fungi and the insects, and that then moves up to feed the birds and the lizards and everything else. And they're really fundamental. And I think we all have kind of learned that. We've turned the tide on losing native plants. And increasingly, people are excited to grow them. whether they're, you know, this is a case of someone doing it the wrong way that I think will more or less work out as we fix it. But the good side of that story is that we see people bringing native plants back into their built landscapes. We're kind of restoring nature one garden at a time. And as we plant a few native plants, you don't have to convert fully to natives. But as you plant a few, you bring back a ton of pollinators. The science shows that just a few native plants will vastly diversify that community. And suddenly your home garden is a really important conservation strategy.
Well, I guess the other question that I have is also about the efforts to actually replace Dudleas and whether or not that mm-hmm. really restores what you're talking about with regard to biodiversity, just because I understand planting natives, you know, yeah. in our landscapes and things like that. But there is an effort to try to mitigate the damage from the poaching by actually planting the ones that law enforcement have been able to get back into the environment. Is that helpful?
It is. It can be helpful. Unfortunately, it's a bit of the Humpty Dumpty effect, that it's a lot easier to break it than it is to fix it. And so, you know, California Native Plant Society chapters in the North Coast and beyond have been engaging with the law enforcement to replant those Dudleas. If we can get them very quickly and we know where they came from, then we will go out and carefully scale those cliffs with the appropriate equipment and plant them back in the wild. And so in some cases, we can get them back out there. Obviously, if you pull a thing up by its roots, it's not going to be as happy when you plant it back. In many cases, we can't plant them back at all. We don't know where they came from. And these things, as I told you, is evolution in action. And so each place has different Dudleas, and you can't just plant them in a random site. You'll do more harm than good. And if they wind up being kind of taken care of in a nursery before they're planted back out, then you run a risk of introducing nursery diseases out into the wild and really doing more harm than good. So really, you know, prevention is the most important thing. In some cases, we can do some level of repair. But for the most part, once they're taken out, they're lost. It's like any wildlife rescue.
And again, Daniel Glusenkamp is Executive Director of the California Native Plant Society. If you want to join the conversation and ask him a question about succulent theft or even just California natives generally, call us at 866-733-6786. Again, 866-733-6786. Email us at forum@kqed.org. Post your comments on our website, kqed.org/forum, on Facebook or on Twitter at KQED Forum. Kate asks, how is the Native Plant Society working with law enforcement? How do we educate Californians about these plants that they, like me, have always taken for granted?
Yeah, good. Well, we're lucky. Pat Freeling and other folks who were on the very front lines of discovering this stuff reached out to the California Native Plant Society to ask for help. And it's kind of what we do. We're kind of a platform that supports this kind of stuff and shares information. And so we quickly engaged in both educating folks, getting our volunteers out on the coast to look for poachers. We put together posters that if you go up to the Mendocino coast, you'll see our, you know, look out for poachers posters. We've got people engaged so that if they see something, they call CalTIP. So that's very important for everyone to keep an eye out. And then, as I mentioned—
Actually, I think I have the number, the anonymous tip line.
Oh, very good.
1-888-334-CALTIP.
Yeah, yeah. And then, you know, we are reintroducing them to the wild. Our scientists and volunteers are doing that work where it's possible. And otherwise, just taking care of them ex situ in nurseries while we try and figure out what to do with these things.
You know, Kate's question makes me think about, you know, in terms of the fact that we Californians take things for granted or also tend not to know how much destruction we can do to them. I'm thinking about the super blooms and the fact that we had a story this week about a helicopter landing in the middle of a giant super bloom.
Yeah, I think super bloom junked the shark with that one. Yeah, I mean, it's pretty incredible. And, you know, it's easy to look at the downside of all of this. But I really think that it's pretty incredible. And it really gets to my thesis that I think we all, biodiversity, the diversity of living things, the diversity of life in California is really important to all of us. And you see it, you see it when you see folks on the street poking at their phone with Pokemon. They're basically, those are analogs for wild creatures. We are supposed to be paying attention to wild creatures. And when we don't, it makes us a little bit sick. It makes us, you know, literally sick. When we do, it makes us connect with something deeper. It unites us. It's something we all have in common, which is kind of scarce and valuable these days. Increasingly, people are concerned about, you know, they're excited for super blooms. They're excited for gardening. They're concerned about the insect apocalypse and losing monarchs and losing pollinators. I think a new generation out there has come to terms with the importance of biodiversity and the importance that we start protecting it. It's always been baked in, from, you know, Miss Balani's fifth grade class to Bill Fisher's Manzanita Capital. We care about plants. We care about animals. We care about these living things. And I think we kind of lost track of that for a while. And it's interesting to see our culture re-embrace it. I'm excited to see where this goes.
Well, let's go to more of our plant-loving listeners. Let's go with Dan in Palo Alto. Hi, Dan.
Hi, how are you? Your conversation's very interesting. I'm just curious where young people can find more information on prohibited sort of gardening, not just gardening, but natural species that need to be protected.
A lot of young people
just don't know where to go.
Yeah, well, I'm sorry, I'm triggering on the word prohibited. As far as things that need care, there's a lot of places that you can find out. You can find information about what needs care, because there's a lot of things that need care. California we have more plants than any other state. We actually have more rare plants than most states even have plant species. So there's a lot of stuff there. I would say you can go to cnps.org, the California Native Plant Society website, and that's a gateway to a lot of information, not just for us, but we really try and put a spotlight on all the range of partners doing stuff. And that includes, you know, groups like One Tam, Audubon Canyon Ranch, Pepperwood, Save Mount Diablo, 10 Strands. There's a lot of entities in the Bay Area working on this stuff and excited to help kids connect with it. There's other resources like CalScape for just finding out what plants grow in your area. But I would say go to cnps.org or send an email to cnps@cnps.org, and we're happy to help connect you with partners in your area who are working on saving these things.
And generally, I mean, as a general rule, right, if it's in its own natural environment, best to leave it there.
Yeah, it's best to leave it there. And as a general rule, these things have quite a bit of, they have an ability to take care of themselves. They've been here for millions of years and haven't gone away. In fact, they just keep adding up, which is why we've got so many species. And so we need to keep in mind that these things, they don't need a lot of care from us. They just need us not to bulldoze them, basically. And in realizing that, it's really a healing thing to realize that there's a deep power to nature of recovery and resilience, that there's something deep and enduring there, and that we don't have to take care of it. We don't have to worry about it, that it all will work out as long as we leave it alone to a certain degree. And I think we need that. As we see our communities hit by fire and by other things, I think seeing the resilience and the deep healing of nature, I think observing that, the act of observing it, is very good for us.
And that's a great point. Charlie in Pacifica, you're on.
Yeah, thanks. Good morning. I'm a former abalone diver, and since abalone's been closed for the last couple years, this activity on the north coast is contributing to the bluff erosion all along Mendocino-Sonoma coast, where these guys are picking up the Dudleya. And my recent conversation with a friend of mine who's a game warden in Mendocino County is this is one of the highest priority subjects, their topic that they're undertaking now. And the lack of the community of abalone divers going out there between April and November, October, November, is we would see these, no one seeing them taking all the plants or stripping the bluffs. But so that's kind of contributed this latest the whole situation with these guys poaching the bluffs It's just what's happening now. Anyways, I'll just listen to you off the air. Thanks for
Charlie,
taking my call.
Thank you.
Yeah, that's tough. And, you know, this actually started as someone thought that it started when someone saw a bunch of boxes in the post office being shipped overseas, and they thought it was ab poachers. So there is a link to ab diving. It's you know, the decline of abs is a real bummer. And hopefully we'll be able to reverse it and get ab divers out there with an eye on the cliffs. Broadly, though, you know, poaching of things in the wild, whether they're plants or animals, is just a bad idea. And for dahlias, it's a bad idea because people are getting caught. If you do it, there's a good chance you'll get caught. If you get caught, there's a really good chance that you will pay a huge fine and spend time in jail. And I think that word is getting out, and I hope that we've seen the worst of it.
Well, David writes, talk about disproportional jail time, 40 days for having some poached succulents in your garage. I'm all for conservation and protecting nature, but this punishment is way more than many worse illegal behaviors. How did we get to this point where we care more about succulents than people?
Yeah, I'm not sure where to go there. I definitely don't think it's caring more about succulents than people. And, you know, I come from a hunting family, and so rule number one is, poachers are bad guys in my book, and for a lot of people, I think they're taking from the commons.
But we'll let David's comment stand, and let's go to Jim in Pacifica. Hi, Jim.
Yeah, hi. Great to have this topic reached. I'd like to encourage the guest and also all those within earshot to reach out to the recreational community. You've got the surfers out there every day, all day long. You've got the mountain bike riders that are out there along the Pacifica coast, and we're the eyes and ears. We've got active Facebook pages. We've posted the 800 number, but I'd encourage the speaker to reach out to the Surf Coalition and all these different groups, because these are the folks that are going to be out there at any given hour.
Thanks for the idea, Jim.
Yeah, thank you very much. And, you know, I want to make it clear that I'm just one, my organization is just one small actor in this. There's a coalition of scientists, land managers, law enforcement folks, agencies who are all working on it. They're all terribly understaffed. And that's part of why I'm here on the radio, to get the word out. Your ideas are spot on. And that's how we're getting stuff done, by everyone getting involved in saving what we love about California.
Well, Kearney and Vallejo, quickly, please.
Sure. Hi. I'm a landscaper, and I've got customers that want low-maintenance, drought-tolerant plants, and they need to be natives. And the question then is, how do we get past the myth that all natives are drought-tolerant and low-maintenance? Could you talk about that?
Okay.
That's an interesting myth, because it's, you know, the great thing about the diversity of California is that you can never say all anything. There's so much variability. We've got plants for deserts, plants for mountaintops, plants for creeks and beaches. We're doing our best to get the word out at the California Native Plant Society, and we work with a lot of partners working on it. We're seeing a sea change. In Southern California, water districts have reached out and engaged us in a whole bunch of projects to get this word out and to actually help people convert their you know, chemical-dependent lawns to beautiful, blooming wildlife habitat. We're seeing people increasingly interested in it. I do know that there is some perception out there, and I think folks in your industry can help us get the word out. We need more people working with the diverse palette of native plants, and I think that's a solution.
Well, Amy writes, I love and appreciate the educational emphasis your guest puts on native plants and their ecology. We have so much to learn and, in exchange, so much to love and protect. Daniel Glusenkamp, thanks so much for joining us this morning.
It was my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Daniel Glusenkamp is Executive Director of the California Native Plant Society. And Forum is produced by Judy Campbell, Tina Lauerberg, Susan Britton, and Ariana Perel. Our engineers are Danny Bringer, Katie McMurrin, and Jim Bennett. Our engagement producer is Amanda Stupai, with online support from Amanda Font. Our interns, Caroline Smith and Sam Klein-Markman. Our executive editor, Ethan Lindsay, and Chief Content Officer, Holly Kernan. I'm Mina Kim.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation.